I assume that you could see on your screen who you see and who's on there, but... Okay, let me get started. Okay, the goal that I was given, or that between what I was given and chose, is to speak about the halachos of Bishlachim. My thought is to go through sort of a summary of the halachos that you learned. I understand you just learned passage on Bishlach Yisrael. Maybe give you some suggestions or some ideas that you may not have thought of, or if somebody did think of them, we'll just organize them into a, we'll call it a chazara. Also, you'll see, as we go through it, that you learn halachas in practice, which is good. And, of course, the people who deal most of these kind of halachas are hashkachas, definitely. And you'll see a little bit how the practical and the halachas sort of come together. I'm not sure how connected you are with the hashkacha that's local to you, but they surely deal with all these kind of issues. They have what to say and thoughts about this, more than most regular people, if you could use that word. Most regular people only think about bishlachim, you know, if there's shiks in the house. But hashkachas think about this on a regular basis. I'm going to, being as this is meant as just a, if we could use the word a chazar or a overview, so we're going to focus on specific examples without getting into too much detail for any specific one. Okay, and I'm going to divide what I have to say into four parts. Excuse me. The first is going to be about foods that are not cooked. The next is the rule of Olah Shulchan Lachem. The next is Ne'achachai. And last is how you create Bishl Yisrael. Okay? I'm not planning on saying anything about Pas Yisrael. Okay? Unless by mistake something happens, but the goal is, the goal is Bishl Yisrael without the Pas Yisrael connections. Okay? Many of the things we're going to talk about come from Simcha Few Days, but it's going to be focused on Bishl Yisrael. Okay? And in the cases that I'm going to give you, My point here is not to tell you all these examples are things that are usur or you have to be machmir. You have to remember that bishlachim is an issur d'rabbanan. You've learned through the halachas, but just to alert you and make you aware of different things that might be going on that you may not have thought of or that will just help make it more nice. Okay, so the first thing we're going to talk about is foods that are not cooked. Okay, so obviously, if we take a cucumber and we never cook it, then it can't be bishlachim. There's lots of foods that are not cooked at all, so of course it can't be bishlachim because if it's still raw, then it can't be cooked. Okay? So what am I going to tell you about foods that are not cooked? Okay? So I'm going to go through a few examples, a few things that relate to those dinim, that foods that are not cooked are not in the rule of bishlachim. Okay? And let me first tell you a few dinim that fall into place over here that are going to be the examples that are going to grow from these dinim. Okay? First of all, if someone who's not Jewish cooks a food till it's Tamaicha ben Chusoy, then that food is Asr. Even though if the Yid cooks it later, he can make it back to be, according to the Ramah, he can make it back to being kosher, Bishl Yisrael. But at the beginning, when the guy cooks it until it's Tamaicha ben Chusoy, that food is Asr. So the Yid can save it, according to the Ashkenazim, but it is Asr even before that. The other side is that the only time we say that food that a goy cooks is usher is when he cooks it with some kind of a fire. But if he cooks it without heat, like he smokes it or he brines it, then that food is not usher. Okay, we give hashkacha to a company that makes salted fish, basically fish that's salted and then cold smoked, and it doesn't need fish at all because the food is it's edible, but it's not considered to have been cooked. And therefore, the din doesn't. There's no din of Bishl Yisrael. Okay. Now, within that last rule that I just told you, that if the guy doesn't cook it, and he just makes it edible through some other manner, that's considered to be that doesn't need Bishl Yisrael because it wasn't cooked by the guy. So there's a machlokes in the Rambam. I'm sure you learned about this when you did the halachas, which is whether if you cook something with hot smoke or live steam, whether that's considered to be cooking or not cooking. Okay. I presume you've talked about that din. Which is to say is that there are some food, some fish that instead of being cold smoked, okay, cold smoked means is you simmer, you get wood pieces of wood to give off a smoke, and the in a chamber that's not hot, if you walk into it, it would not feel hot in that room, and the food becomes edible just by the smoke coming into contact with the food over a long time, the food becomes edible. That doesn't need Bishul Yisrael. The heat doesn't have to be part of that. But there's something called hot smoking, where there's heat and smoke being done at the same time, or the smoke itself is very hot that's involved in making it cook. That's one type of preparation. And another is when you cook something in steam. That means is you have steam coming from a boiler or from at home in a pot, and the steam is hitting the food. So it's not fire that's hitting the food, but the food is getting cooked by heat. But there's no fire involved. There's only steam being involved. Okay, so the Achorim talk about, whether those two methods of cooking are considered to be cooking or not cooking. If it's not cooking, if it's just making it edible, but it's not cooking, it's like smoking, then if a guy does it, it doesn't make the food also. Okay? So one example...
hot smoke and steam?
What's the difference between hot smoke? Because when we say something is hot smoke, means is a piece of wood is smoldering, it's giving off smoke, and that smoke is what cooks the food. It's not cooking, it's not only cooking because it's hot. It's cooking because of the smoke, whatever the smoke does to it. As opposed to steam, means if you cook up a pot of water on your stovetop, what comes out of there is hot steam. The hot steam is sort of like hot water, but it's not really water, and it's not really a fire. It's sort of this in-between thing, which is maybe like smoking and maybe not, depending on what you look like.
The difference is whether it's dry or wet?
No, the difference is whether it's water or it's something from not water. You could call that dry or wet if you want to. But the difference is when you smoke something with smoke, that seems to be closer to what we call ishun. Okay, when you're ma'ashin something, that's not bishlakim. When you cook with hot steam from a pot of water, it's not really so different than cooking it in the pot of water. You cooked it in the pot of water, that would be bishlakim. If I take it on top of the water and the steam hits it, that seems to be pretty similar to that also. Okay? So those things are shayla lachronim. But now, an example of that is that you may be familiar with, is canned tuna. Okay, because canned tuna, before it goes into the can, they cook the tuna live. The tuna not live. They cook the tuna in live steam, which is to say is they hang the tuna up in a room and they pump steam at the tuna to make them edible. Okay, there's meat that's cooked like that also, but this tuna gets cooked like that. After the tuna have been all cooked like that, then they get crushed up and put into the can. So if you think that cooking in live steam is not considered to be a form of cooking that's usher, then tuna doesn't need Bishul Yisrael. There's no need for Bishul Yisrael because the tuna was made edible through a not through a cooking method. Later gets cooked again in the can in a more traditional manner, but too late. At that point it's already edible, so you would say it was not cooking. So there are those who say that cooking tuna does not need Bishul Yisrael for that reason, because it's cooked in live steam. The live steam is a form of Yishun, doesn't need Bishul Yisrael. Now, there's another reason. We're going to go a little off topic for a second, but a little out of topic, which is why tuna should not need Bishul Yisrael. And that's because of the following. When you cook tuna in... I'm going to pause and not tell you that reason. You'll get the reason in a minute. I'm going to stop. I'm not going to tell you that reason. Okay. We'll get to that reason in a second. So let's just leave this part of tuna for now. Okay. So now, within foods that are continuing, we're talking about foods that are not cooked. So there's a food that, I don't know about you, but as far as I know, everybody's got in their pantry, which is rice. Okay, when you take rice out of your pantry, to the look of everybody, the rice is not cooked. Okay, rice is raw. You take the rice, you put it into water, and you cook it on the fire. But really, there are three types of rice. There's rice that's truly raw, hasn't been cooked at all. That rice, obviously, is kosher because no good cooked it at all. And then there's parboiled rice and instant rice. Okay, those terms don't have such an official meaning, but roughly they mean it's parboiled is a contraction of the word partially boiled, which means it's a good cooked it, the factory cooked it partially. And means is, let's say it really takes 20 minutes to cook rice, they did 10 minutes of the cooking, and the last 10 minutes you do at home. And instant rice means that they cooked it 100%. They cooked it completely. And now you at home are basically just warming it up. Okay, you're just putting it into water and warming it up. Okay, how would you know which one it is? Sometimes the name gives it away. Parboiled or instant gives it away. But really, what you need to do is, which is what I've done, take it and put it into warm water. Take some water that's, I don't know, 150 degrees and pH 80, and dunk this stuff into it, and let it sit there for 15 minutes. And now it'll have gotten moist, and it'll gotten warmed up, and now see whether it's edible or not. See what it tastes like at that point. If it tastes like raw rice, then you're good. If it tastes like rice that's been partially cooked, or fully cooked, so what, now it depends. If it's fully cooked, then unless a yid was part of the cooking, it's bishlakim, because rice needs bishlisrael. If it only comes out to be partially cooked, then we're in an in-between stage. If it's partially edible, then it is bishlakim. It was cooked by the guy. The yid could save it by continuing the cooking afterwards. He could cook it at home. He could do the rest of the cooking in his house, and if he's Ashkenazi, then he'll be okay, and he'll have finished over there to bishlisrael. But before that, he won't be. It will not be bishlisrael. At that point, it came into his house, treif, and he'll make it bishlisrael when he cooks his rest. Okay? Now, another example of the exact same thing is another food called couscous, which you may be familiar with. And there's two ways to make couscous. There's the real way, and then there's the fake way. Okay? The way that's not the real way is basically to make little balls of pasta, tiny little pieces of pasta, and they look like couscous, so they call it that, and those are just plain old pasta. Okay? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about couscous, which is grains of wheat that are shaved down to be the shape of a little ball or a little tiny granules. Okay, they're whole pieces of wheat. So those foods, by and large, are fully cooked in the factory. Therefore, if bishlisrael wasn't taken care of in the factory, then that food is coming to you would be bishlakim. Now, the good news for those giving hashgacha, or even maybe for a consumer, if you knew, is in a lot of cases, these foods are cooked with live steam. So if you think that cooking in live steam doesn't need bishlisrael, then you're good from a different perspective. Okay, but the first question is, was it cooked by the guy? So if you give hashgacha to a rice company, you have to say, is the rice being cooked either partially cooked, kamaicha ben jesoi, or fully cooked? And in those cases, then you have to think about, does this need bishlisrael? Either you say it needs bishlisrael, and we do something to make sure it's part of the cooking, or we say it doesn't need it because it's cooked with steam, or some other reason why you think it's not, but you have to at least think that through to come up with the reason why it should be mutter
to sell. Okay. And if it was partially, let's say it was cooked more than like in the factory, why can't we settle on the fact that when it's going into the house, it's going to be cooked the rest of the way?
Okay, so I'm going to get to that in a minute, okay? We'll leave that for now. Potentially you could. Potentially the people giving hashgacha could be some kind of that. We'll talk about that in a little bit later. Okay? I don't remember where it is in my notes, but we're going to get it's coming later. Okay? You have to believe me. Okay, some other examples of foods that are sort of cooked are there's such a thing as lasagna noodles that are pre-cooked. Again, lasagna noodles and most people's lasagna noodles are not cooked at all. They're raw, but there's such a thing as pre-cooked lasagna noodles. And if I understand correctly, quick cooking oats and quick cooking barley are not cooked in the factory. They're just made thinner so that they cook quickly. But it depends. Again, if your lasagna, if you're pre-cooked lasagna, then it potentially needs bishlisrael. It may come out of the factory being bishlakim. If you have another food, if you say the oats were never cooked, then you're okay. Then they don't need anything. The oats, anyhow, oats as in oatmeal, are not oil shochel vacham. It's a different reason why it's mutter. But in this question of, so this is the end of my section about food that's not cooked. But my point here is that there are foods that are not cooked, or look like they're not cooked, or are cooked, but in din they're not considered to be cooked. So those are all part of making a decision of whether food needs bishlisrael or not, is this group of foods. Okay. Any questions here?
Is there any steam which is like borderline hot or cold, or it's always clear which one it is?
No, steam is always hot. Steam by its nature is always hot. Smoke could be. Well, what it is that there's really, in smoke is particularly used in fish for some reason, and cold smoking is very obvious. The rumor is 80 degrees, 90 degrees. It's obvious. What happened? An interesting thing happened with hot smoking. Companies were doing hot smoking with just smoke, and people were pretty comfortable that didn't need to be bishlisrael. But then came along. They came up with an idea that they could smoke the fish, and at the same time have basically fire in the chamber to cook the fish as well. So They now call that hot smoking, but it was not really hot smoke. It was hot and smoke. Okay, it was smoke going on to give it a flavor, and it was hot to make it edible, and it was hot and smoke, not hot smoke. Okay, I'm not sure if I'm being clear about that. The problem was that the heat that was doing the cooking was just plain old heat, and that shouldn't be bishri soil, which is going to be very complicated to make bishri soil for these foods. So it came along somebody, you may know the name, Rabbi Zwicka from the OU, he took care of fish at that time, and he convinced the industry, it's like not to believe, he convinced the industry that it's in their interest to, before you hot smoke or smoke with heat fish, you first brine it, which is you sink it into salty, very salty water for a long time. So he convinced them that it's in their interest to brine it for a very long time before they smoke it. And they brine it to the point that it's completely edible. Once they made it completely edible through the brining, then the cooking afterwards made no difference. So he didn't just convince kosher company. He convinced the industry that that was in their best interest. And of course, Ashkel has to make sure they're doing that. But it's very standard now that they brine it for a very long time. And so when it comes out of the brine, it's fully edible. And then afterwards, if they have smoke, it doesn't make a difference. We have a company like that. We check the samples to make sure that the brining really does what it's supposed to, but it comes out of the brine completely edible. So then at that point we consider it to be that it became edible not through cooking, and the fact that they afterwards cook it doesn't make a difference.
What was it smart enough to convince them?
I don't remember. It was a business logic that he explained to them why it was worthwhile. Okay? So how he did that I don't know. It was before my time. But he did a tremendous type of everybody, because by getting them to do that for their own purposes, when we went, I don't know how many, maybe 10 years ago, we certified this fish company that I'm talking about, we walked in, they were already brining it the way they were supposed to. It was fine. We made sure that they did it, but they were doing it because that's just how they do it. They just brine it for a very long time. And then they smoked it afterwards, you know? Okay. Now on to Oil and Shulchan Aruch. Okay. There are two ways to define Oil Shulchan Aruch. Most people, I shouldn't say that, most American Hashgachas define Oil Shulchan Aruch as what you would serve at a wedding or at a fancy banquet, or what the king would, what we say the melech would serve when he was at an official formal state dinner. But the other side is that there was a chazanish who supposedly said that anything that a king would eat, bechlal, would be considered shulchan lachem. So if the king eats it for breakfast, that's considered shulchan lachem. There's an example of sardines, that the Queen of England eats sardines for breakfast, it seems. So if you judge by what a king would eat any time, then there's almost no foods that are not oil shulchan lachem. I mean, kings are, you know, like they say, you know, they put their pants on one leg at a time also, you know what I mean? They're pretty much like everybody else. So there are certain things that are so low that they wouldn't eat, but basically they would eat almost everything. There's almost nothing that's not Ola Shulchan Aruch, if you look at it like that. So most assume that Shulchan Aruch means is what a king serves when he's acting as a king, okay? Not while he's watching the Super Bowl, but what does he do when he's, you know, formally dressed and sitting downstairs and meeting the people, what kind of foods do they serve? So, for example, we look at foods that are served at a wedding, so if you say to me to do, I don't know, pancakes, needs to be Bishri Yisrael, then we say pancakes are not Ola. Pancakes are not Ola Shulchan Aruch. I just serve pancakes at brunches, at nice brunches, right? But they never serve pancakes at weddings. Okay, you never serve pancakes at weddings. So putting it aside whether it's pots or not, put it on the side. But as far as being Ola Shulchan Aruch, no, it's not Ola Shulchan Aruch, because you would never serve it at a yeshiva dinner. You might serve it at a ladies' brunch, but not at the yeshiva's official dinner, so we consider that to be not Ola Shulchan Aruch.
Which one is it, though? Is it the wedding, or is it state dinner, or is it, I mean, I feel like they're very different.
They're not so different from each other. To say that it's only a state dinner is very restrictive, because that's a much more limited group of food that he eats. So we say anything, a wedding is a judge. When we go to a caterer and say, would you serve the following food, we say to him, would you serve it at a wedding? That's how we would say to him, you serve it at a fancier banquet. That's what we judge it. We at least we don't certify anything at, you know, state dinners, you know, so we can't look at it like that, you know. So wedding is a more typical way that we would look at it. Okay, now, we also make an assumption that, let's say we have a food, that there are two ways to cook the same food. One way would be Oil HaShulchan Aruch, and one way would be not Oil HaShulchan Aruch. we say, most assume that it goes by the specific method that you cooked it. And the example of that is, what I was going to say before, one of the examples is tuna fish. If you take tuna and you broil it, it's oil shulchan lachem. It's called a tuna steak, and it's oil shulchan lachem. But if you take tuna and you steam it, then it's not oil shulchan lachem. It comes out soggy and looking like tuna fish that came out of a can. So that's not oil shulchan lachem. So beforehand we spoke about that the steaming of the fish might be not considered cooking at all, because steaming maybe is not a method of cooking. But now I'm saying to you a different thing. I'm saying to you, let's say steaming is considered a method of cooking. Let's say. But steamed fish is not oila shulchan lachem. Broiled fish, broiled tuna is, but steamed tuna is not. And therefore, since it's not oila shulchan lachem, it doesn't need bishul yisrael for that simple reason, because if it's not oila shulchan lachem, then it doesn't need bishul yisrael. Okay, so most of the American hashgachas follow that way of looking at things. Another example of that is potato chips. Okay, there are lots of ways to make potatoes that are oila shulchan lachem. But when you cut potatoes and you fry them, they're not oila shulchan lachem. So potato chips, we would give hashgacha, we probably do, give hashgacha on potato chips that without being bishul yisrael, because we say these potato chips are not oila shulchan lachem. Even though there are other potatoes that are oila shulchan lachem, and those potatoes need bishul yisrael. We give other companies that give, they make potato salad, they need bishul yisrael. But the potato chip companies don't need bishul yisrael because fried potatoes like that are not oila shulchan lachem. Okay?
Does it depend on the way it's cut or like that?
So, you know, a little bit, if you cut it beforehand, you might say, well, let's say the potato chip cut really thin, so not oila shulchan lachem. When it gets to that, we're not so exact to say, I cut it this way versus this way, whether it is oila or not. Within a certain amount of reason, if we cut it a half an inch, it would be oila shulchan lachem. According to a quarter of an inch, it was not oila, we probably wouldn't differentiate. But the difference between a French fry and a baked potato, that they have nothing to do with each other. French fries are not small baked potatoes. They have no shaykhs. They have nothing to do with each other. So it's a different way of cooking. This way is oila, well, this way is not oila. Okay.
How do you, what
color
is called a min in that area and what's not?
I don't know the answer. I can't give you an exact definition for that answer, to answer that question. But I know that a steamed fish and a broiled fish is not the same thing. And I know that a cooked, a fried potato chip and a baked potato are not the same thing. When we get to a closer case, I don't know, I have to think about that, you know. I don't know if I can give you an exact definition for that. Okay.
Would we ever say that a certain, let's say nowadays there's a trend by chassidus to do things much more casual.
Mm-hmm.
So, just therefore the halakha, the situation that we're in,
of course, it depends on the time and place. The din is not so flexible that it changes every day of the week. But if people start eating a certain way, then yeah, it depends on where you are and what's doing. So if in Chicago we eat a certain way, and in Atlanta you don't eat that way, then each place we judge differently. And if we're in a more formal place, and you're in a more relaxed place, and you eat a little differently, then yeah, each place is going to be different. That's
cool. Okay, but then if a lot of says, oh, sure, we're going to stay and eat the steak dinner, if they have to serve at a kid's table, and the fast food serve hot dogs, we're not going to say, oh, sure,
of course not. That's correct. But if
it's a trend to go casual or fast food, so it's not a fast anymore. It's not short anymore.
Okay, so the answer is, the first guy who does it, you're right, and the second guy and the third guy. At a certain point, that becomes the way people eat. You know what I mean? When I said to before, we don't judge in one day. We're not going to one day say, hey, I saw it last night, they served potato chips. Okay, they're oila shulchan lachem. No, but if all of a sudden everybody eats potato chips at chassidus, okay, then that's what they do. You know what I mean? If that becomes the way people start eating, then the din will change. It doesn't change in one day. No, it's not so flitzy that today it isn't, tomorrow it's not. Okay, now, rice.
What about
the mazon of the round of mazon kaveru?
The whole reason for kazal was to create an interaction.
Right. So we understand that to mean is, mazon kaveru doesn't mean you just say to the guy next door, hey, you want to have a beer. It means when I invite someone over for a formal dinner, okay, when the mechutanim come over, what do we serve that person at the meal? Not what do I give the guy if I see him walking down the street? What do I, you know, offer him for shalom on the soup? Okay, so the I mentioned rice as being a food that's Ola Shulchan Lachem, which Lachar it is, as far as we know it's Ola Shulchan Lachem. But now I have two foods that are made from rice that are not Ola Shulchan Lachem. Okay, one is rice pudding, and one is rice krispies. Okay, those are both made from rice, but those foods, the way they are, they're not Ola Shulchan Lachem. But there's an odd thing about the way they're made. Those foods are made by first cooking the rice, and after we make cooked rice, then we do something else to turn them into rice pudding or into Rice Krispies. So does that food need to be Bishin Solos or not? On the one hand, it's not Erlach Shulchan Aruch. Rice pudding is not Erlach Shulchan Aruch. But on the other hand, before it was rice pudding, it was plain old cooked rice, which was Erlach Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so the general rule for that question is the following. If it happens in one long process, meaning we put rice into a pot and we cook it, and instead of taking it off the fire after 15 minutes when it's ready, we let it keep on cooking, and it cooks instead for 15 minutes, it cooks for an hour, and at the end of the hour, now it's a big mush, and that's rice pudding. That doesn't need Bishul Yisrael. Because the cooking, although in the middle we could have scooped some out and it would have been edible, the cooking was a cooking that was not made, something that was not Erlach Shulchan Aruch. But if we cook it partially, and then we cook it, and then we take it out, and then convert it into something that's not Erlach Shulchan Aruch, that food doesn't Bishul Yisrael. We had it just this week, it came up. Not for us, someone else's hashkacha asked us about this. They have a company that makes these veggie burgers. And the veggie burgers are not Erlach Shulchan Aruch. But the veggie burgers have in them cooked rice. And they cook the rice in a regular pot. They cook the rice, and when they finish basically in a regular pot, when they finish cooking the rice, then they do some more steps to it to turn it into a veggie burger. So we said that we thought that needs Bishul Yisrael, because the rice, as it comes out of the pot, is Erlach Shulchan Aruch. The fact that you later, you know, the next step, and even though that was the plan, you plan to do that, but it's a second step to turn into something else, that doesn't help us, and the food needs Bishul Yisrael.
I'm about to
do Rice Krispies. Now, Rice Krispies seemingly would be what sound like the second thing I said, which is first they cook them, and they're good rice, and then they crisp them, means they pop them, and they turn into Rice Krispies. But I went to a Rice Krispie company, to a factory, and the rice that they cook, you wouldn't eat it in 100 years. Nobody would want to eat it. Forget about the Erlach Shulchan Aruch. Okay, the way it comes out looking, maybe this is something unusual, but that stuff that came out of there was not, I mean, to me it looked like dog food. Okay, it wasn't like anybody was going to eat that at Shulchan Aruch. So, in theory, if you first cooked it and then you made it into Rice Krispies, it would be a shiloh, but in practice, that's not what I saw. In practice,
Is that because it was an inferior grade of rice, or that because of the way they cooked it?
I'm not sure. I don't remember the details of what it was. Was it? I don't think it was. It may have been the grade of rice, but I think they mixed other things in with it before. They did whatever it was. It came out looking like nobody would eat that stuff. Okay, it was like no way would that be Erlach Shulchan Aruch. Okay, and for whatever reason, that's how they make Rice Krispies. It's all fine. But if it was not true, if the truth is that it came out of the first beginning of the process as plain old rice, then l'chayra, it should need Bishul Yisrael. Okay? Now, another example of this whole thing is, I'm going to do some of this, potato products.
I need to wonder, why is that any different than in a case where it was cooked to Michael Venture's side by a guy, and then later in the year, maybe, you know, they parboiled rice, did something to it.
Because over here, remember, afterwards, Kamacha Ben Joshua, it's usher. Now, a yid could save it by cooking it. A yid can't save it by making it not Erlach Shulchan Aruch. It's Bishlachim. Bishlachim is usher. The fact that you mix it up... I don't know if someone's still talking, but I don't think that you could fix it according to the Ashkenazim. We could fix it by cooking later, because the yid still was part of the cooking. But to turn it into not... at this point, it's too late. It doesn't help for them. Okay, now, there's a few potato products that you may be familiar with. The one, for sure, you've seen, which is called potato flakes. Okay, that's like powdered potatoes that people use. They mix them with water, and they turn back into mashed potatoes. Okay, you use them for, you know, in yeshiva lunches, they make them, or you want to make Pringles or something like that. You take these powdered potatoes, and they... And they put water into it, and turn it back into mashed potatoes. So to make those, there are three steps for making those. The first is you blanch it, which means is you take the potato, you dunk it into boiling water, and it sits there for a few minutes. Then you cook it, and you slice it up, and then you cook it. And after you cook it, you put it onto a dryer, it's called a drum dryer, to boil all the water out and make into this powder, these flakes. So, after the second step, after the cooking, it comes out of that machine, after the second cooking, it comes out as a huge pot, basically, of mashed potatoes. Delicious mashed potatoes. The workers in the factory eat it for lunch. Okay, it comes out of there, they scoop it out, put it into a plate, and go home and eat, and go to the side and eat it for lunch. But, bederach klal, after the first process, the blanching, does not make it edible. Not even come out of medrusoy. It's just a few minutes in the hot water. So, in most cases, the first cooking is done with water, and the second cooking is done with live steam. And there's another tzad l'hakol in that second machine I'm not going to talk about, but it's cooked with live steam. So if you think that cooking with live steam doesn't need bishul yisrael, it's not considered to be cooking, so it doesn't need bishul yisrael, then the food is mutter, because the first process, the water process, didn't cook it. The second process was just with live steam, and therefore doesn't need bishul yisrael. In fact, after it gets dry, there's nothing not relevant to us. But the second process is done with live steam. If you think that live steam doesn't need to be bishul yisrael, then it's mutter. Now, that's true. Wait, let me just finish 1 second. What I just said to you is true in most cases, but I spent once a couple of days in Idaho going to a bunch of potato factories, and in every factory, we tasted the potatoes coming out of the blancher to see if they were edible, and they were not, except in one company. Where they were cut thinner, and they stayed there for a little bit longer, and they were edible. So all of a sudden, the general rule that said that the blancher doesn't get cooked, and the second machine is with steam, and if you're okay, was not true. Because in this particular factory, even the blancher was making it edible. And if it makes it edible, then the food is straight. Okay, so what was the question?
After the blancher, even though if that's different than a situation where you overcook something and not leave it under the shakalaka, then remember it's a question that still should be uttered. So if I halfway cook something,
So the blancher is not kamaich b'mitzvah. It's just a few minutes. Think about a potato in your house and dunk it in water for 3 minutes. It's not going to get cooked. So that's what the blancher is, just a few minutes. It releases gases, whatever reason why they do it. It's not a cooking. I said in most cases. In one case it was, but by and large it's not a cooking. Okay? Now, all that I just told you, that was for potato flakes or potato granules, like powders. But there's another type of thing. They're called potato dices. Okay, they're chopped up potatoes. They look like you may have seen them, like they're called hash browns, like thin strips of little potato that dried out, that are like hard and crunchy, or the dices are little cubes like that things. Now those are cooked in water. Okay, those are cooked. They're not cooked in sinner. They're cooked in water, and those leave the factory roi l'achila. They're not fully cooked, but they're kamach ben drusoy. So if you want to give hashgach on those, you have two choices. Either you're going to say is, we're going to take a bishul yisrael, because we don't want it to lead to factory trade. The other choice is, some hashgachas used to do, supposedly they had stopped, but they used to do what they would say is, let it leave the factory trade. This is what someone had mentioned before. Let it leave the factory trade, but it's not a problem. It's leaving the factory trade, but a yid's going to finish it. It's not fully cooked. A yid's going to finish the cooking. So the yid who finishes the cooking will make a bishul yisrael. Okay? So that was the theory. And someone had mentioned this before. Let it be trade when it leaves the factory, but you'll cook it when you get it home, I think, when we talked about rice. So the danger was that what happens if a yid doesn't finish the cooking? Okay? And there were a few examples of how that could happen, that a yid wouldn't finish the cooking. Okay? One was that one of the companies that was under Hashgacha was a company making vodka. And the vodka company needed potatoes. So this is a cheap way of buying potatoes to make the vodka. So they bought the potato dices from one of these companies, and they made the vodka out of it. Now, in the vodka company, there was no cooking going on. Nobody was cooking it. For sure, not a yid was cooking it. They were buying it. It came with hashgacha. So they said, hey, it comes with hashgacha. We could use it. not realizing that the hashkacha was assuming that a yid's going to finish off the cooking, because we don't want to eat dice by themselves, but guess what? In this case, they were. So these people were making vodka that was bishalakim. They were using potatoes that were bishalakim leaving the factory with hashkacha on them, and then they were turning it into a food without any yid being part of that cooking in the second part. Okay. And another example was that once I was sitting talking with somebody about this question, and showing him what is potato dices, and one of the people sitting in the room started munching on them. They taste like hard, crunchy potato chips. Okay? And like the guy's munching on them, like, hello, you're eating bishlakam. That food has hashkar on it, but it's bishlakam. He didn't know, he's just munching on them. Okay? So, not to say that that's usual. In, 99 out of 100, it's not going to be, no one's going to eat these foods without you cooking it. But it's a dangerous decision to sell food that's bishlakam when you know that it's possible someone's going to eat that food. Someone's going to end up eating that food without doing finishing off the cooking. Okay, so we have a little danger over here of we are counting on it that the yid's going to finish cooking, but that's not really what's going to happen.
Or you have it when someone like me eats them up in the oven.
So the answer is that if a person has a non-Jewish person working in their house, the normal procedure is they tell the guy, you can't turn on any fires, or you can't cook any food. They don't start teaching the guy that, I can't say that's always the truth, but the general rule is they say to the person, you can't cook anything. I have to turn on all fires or whatever. Maybe they give them an exception, you can make coffee. But by and large, they tell them not to cook anything, so they feel, the Hashkacha felt they were safe, because a yid will always finish with the cooking. And again, by and large, that's what's going to happen. But 1 in 1,000 is not going to happen, so it's a dangerous way to give hashkacha. You're giving hashkacha on tray food. The food is leaving the factory tray, but you're hoping the guy's going to make it kosher when he gets home. Okay. I'm skipping some stuff. Let's move to the third section. Nechacha. Okay. The by and large, it's pretty straightforward what foods are considered nechachai or nechachai. But there's an interesting shach in Sifkat and Yutes, which I'm going to tell you three nafkaminis to that, what the shach says. The shach says that when we have what happens if you have a food that people prefer to eat when it's cooked, but they would be willing to eat it raw also. Okay? He says, still get hard agasin, whatever they are. They would prefer it cooked, but they're willing to eat it raw also. And the shach basically says is, that's considered to be nechachai. Meaning is, for a food to need bishul yisrael, it has to be a food that people would not eat, or most people would not eat if it was raw. But if people would eat it raw, but they prefer to eat it when it's cooked, then that food is considered to be nechachai, which means this doesn't need bishul yisrael, because that's a big cooler for us, it doesn't need bishul yisrael. Okay, so our three applications of that question, of that shach that I just said to you, three possible applications. Okay. The first is cranberry sauce. Cranberry sauce. Cranberries by themselves, if you have plain old cranberries, are you could bite into them when they're raw, but they're very, very tart. They're very sour. And most people would never eat plain cranberries raw. The way you eat cranberry sauce, people would eat cranberry sauce because the cranberries are in the can and cooked together with a lot of sugar. Okay, they're very sweet. So the sweetness together with the tartness gives the flavor that people like. Okay, you eat cranberry juice, you're not eating pure, there's no such thing. In a regular supermarket, you're not going to find regular, pure, 100% cranberry juice because nobody would drink it. It's way too sour, too tart for people to drink. So you always have it mixed with sugar. So should we say that it needs bishul yisrael? Those cans of cranberry sauce would need bishul yisrael because they're cooked, they're not nechachai. So in America, we say they are on Thanksgiving. People eat them. That's considered at a fancy dinner, you serve cranberry sauce. It goes, it's part of a sophisticated, more fancy dinner. Now, you could argue, you could say maybe it's not, but that was the thinking was that Israel is shalom lachem because it has such a place and culture. That's what probably half the cranberry. Again? No. Sufkan yod is a snack food. No. Sufkan yod is not a fancier food. You
serve it at the White House cocktail party.
Right.
Thanksgiving than they.
I don't think it's a saint. I think at the Hanukkah party, it's like someone mentioned beforehand, it's like feeding at the kids' table. It's like, aha, it's Hanukkah, so we're serving this food. Do you think they ever serve sufganiyot at anything else? As opposed
they did. They were serving grandma. Oh, it's a cultural thing. The whole country can use it.
Right. It's the way we eat. It's considered, this is the way we eat. It's not a side thing. It's not a mistake. That's part of what you have to have. You have turkey and cranberry sauce and pumpkin pie. You know, that's what you're supposed to eat, you know? Now, at first, there were those who thought that maybe you could eat cranberries and nechachai, because if you look on the packages of cranberries, the people who saw actual cranberries had ways for you to sweeten them without cooking them. Okay, there were ways to make it royal achilah without cooking, but that didn't go so well because it's very rare. Almost nobody does that. Okay, they're trying to sell cranberries, so they give you all kinds of ideas of what to do with them, but come on, nobody eats them without cooking. Okay. But the good news for the Jews was that the people who make cranberries decided they wanted to sell more cranberries, and they came up with this idea. They could make something called craisins. Okay, craisins are cranberries that are made to be like raisins, they're dried out like raisins, but they're dried out and sweetened in a way that doesn't involve cooking. So all of a sudden, they became now this meaningful group of people who eat cranberries raw. Okay, they don't eat them, they don't need to have them cooked. They can eat them hot without cooking them because there's this thing. It's a thing. If you eat craisins, that's a reasonable way to eat cranberries. And therefore, that saved the cranberries. The cranberries shouldn't eat bishri as well.
Even though you're adding sugar?
Because you're not cooking it. You're eating it without any kind of cooking to it. You're just, you know, putting sugar onto it, and then that was considered nechachai. You could argue, but that's considered nechachai because it's edible raw without cooking. Now, the next case is more complicated. Okay.
Wait, so we're not saying the same thing by Doug Molina, or like if a guy comes and just cooks a fish that was never salted, he's not going to say there's fish alakum to it.
Yes.
What do you mean? Salted.
Okay. That's a good point. That has to do with the next thing I'm going to tell you. Okay. Listen to the next case, and that'll hopefully answer your question. Is beets? Okay. Beets are. I'm not talking about if you ate raw beets. I don't know if anybody eats that. But like canned beets or beet is cooked, and lahara, you can't eat beets that are raw. If you take a bite out of one, it's like biting into a potato. You can't eat a beet that's raw. So the thinking many people would assume is that it should be considered not nechachai. Okay, so now if it's early shulchan aruch, I don't know if it is or it's not, but let's say it is early shulchan aruch, then it would need bishul as well. So came back the argument that said, but there is a way to eat beets raw. You eat them as part of chlein. You mix them with horseradish, and then you eat them without any cooking to it. Okay? Now the argument against that was, which seemed as a strong argument, which what someone said before, it was, when you put them into horseradish, you may not be cooking them with the horseradish, but you're doing something else. You're doing kavush k'mavushal. Okay? You're making the royal achila through a method that we consider to be, you had to do something to make the thing royal achila. You didn't just sprinkle sugar onto it like with the cranberries. You just pour on some sugar. You had to do something, a process to make it royal achila. So in the case of the beets, you had to pickle it, basically you had to pickle it with the vinegar and with the horseradish to make it royal achila. And in the case of the dog maluach, if you just put salt onto fish, you can't eat it. You can't just sprinkle salt onto it and eat it. You have to do a whole process. You have to do maliach kereser. You have to put it through something that makes it edible. So salt is part of that, but it's not salting the fish. You got to go a whole to-do. So you don't have to do a cooking to make it edible, but you have to do a whole process to make it edible. It's considered not nechachai. Raw, you can't eat it. As opposed to, and harder the beets are the same thing, as opposed to the cranberries, you don't have to do any cooking to it. You can eat it raw by just putting on the sweetener onto it. Just sweetening them, that makes it royal achilah. That's seemingly the difference between the beets and the cranberries. And I hope I answered whoever's question, I don't know who it was, about the...
The craisins are dried out, are they not?
They're dried out, yes, they are.
That's not called a process,
but
they've dried up first.
The word process is not the best word. It's not a cooking type process. I don't want to use the word cooking either, but it's not a process that in the group of things like cooking, like salting something, brining something, or smoking it, or pickling it. That's like a cooking type process. You know what I mean? You can't eat it.
Everything is official.
Right. Correct. Now, even if it's not technically bishul, but it's something that's within the realm of what we consider bishul, to make it edible, that's considered not nechochai. But as opposed to the cranberries, that the thought is, you could argue about the cranberries, but the thought of the cranberries is that you don't have to do anything to make them edible. They are edible, so to speak, as is just a little spicing of it, so to speak, is enough. Okay.
What about citrus on fish?
Okay.
Is that the method that you used to cook it with the acid of the citrus?
Say it again?
One method of cooking fish is to squeeze a lemon on it.
I'm not familiar with that. You squeeze lemon onto a fish, and then what happens?
The acidity and certain kinds of products can cook the fish.
Okay. So I never heard of that. But if I had to guess what that means is, that's also a brine. You don't just squeeze it on and then bite into it. You squeeze it on, and then you come back tomorrow, and now it's fermented and turned into something edible. So that's, again, a thing that's a cooking-type process to make it edible. If you just had to squeeze on lemon and take a bite out of it, that's considered nechochai. But I have a feeling that's not what you're doing, right? It's something more serious than that, you know? Okay, now, our last example of this is canned corn. Okay, canned corn is... Now, before we talk about canned corn, I have to tell you, there are two types of corn, okay? There's one kind of corn that's called cow corn. Cow, like, you know, cows that give milk. And other one called sweet corn. Cow corn is the kind of corn that you use for making, like, tortillas and wraps, okay? That... is needs a lot of cooking. It's for sure not nechochai. Not a question. But the canned corn that you have in your can, or that when you go to the supermarket and you buy corn on the cob and you eat those, that's called sweet corn. Now, that corn, almost everybody eats it cooked. They cook the corn, or they get corn out of a can, means it's been cooked in the factory. They eat the food cooked. But this is an example of what the Shach said, is that people would eat it raw, because if you take corn on the cob and bite into it, you'll find out that it tastes perfectly fine. Now, that doesn't mean that people don't prefer the taste of it cooked, but the Shach said that if you have a food that it's okay to eat it as is, but you prefer it in the cooked form, that's considered nechochai. Now,
I've seen many times that when they have that thing on the side of the road, you can stop by, pick it up, and just shove it right there and eat it.
Right. It's completely right. Now, that even though most people prefer it in the cooked form, but Lamaisa says it's perfectly edible, so that's what the Shach is talking about. The Shach was talking about corn, of course, but that's the example, what the Shach is talking about, that's considered nechochai. Now, this seemed correct until someone raised a question, and they said this, wait a second, even though it's possible to eat it raw, if nobody eats it raw, and there's a mamash like nobody who does it, then that's not going to count. It's got to be at least some kind of minority of people who do it for it to count as nechochai. So we did a survey. And we asked people if they eat corn raw. And we came back, I forgot the number, but it was maybe 10-15% of the people said, yeah, they do it all the time, 100%, they eat it raw. You know, so there was a nice sizable amount of people. It is nechochai, for sure. Even if you never tried it, if you try it tomorrow, you'll find out that it's nechochai. But we, in fact, found that there were lots of people who do that. So we would consider canned corn to not need Bishul Yisrael. Now,
who was the survey done on? Meaning, if it's in the middle of Indiana, like that's not riot family or Chicago.
Because?
Because the people are more like, you know, upper class or whatever. I'm saying they're not like normally done.
Okay, that's a fair question. Maybe we had to poll people where they come from to find out maybe the people who are more cosmopolitan, you know, then they won't eat it, and everybody else would. But I have to tell you something. The people, even the people who never eat it raw, if you give it to them, and you say to them, do me a favor, just take a bite out of it, they walk away saying it's edible. What we're really looking for is to see is there at least a minority of people who do it. We don't need, it's for sure edible. It's not a question that physically it's edible. People buy it and say, yeah, I never tried it, but it tastes fine. The question, but if there'll be nobody who does it, then you can't say it's nechochai. Nobody does that. How can you say nechochai? So this is like just helping us with that. But you might be right. Maybe all the people we asked are people who live in, you know, more hicky, and they don't, you know, they eat different kinds of food. Maybe. Could be. Okay, now.
The Shach says a second svara. He doesn't just say that one. He says, oh, that roi shigamino, the ikra actually wants to discuss. You're assuming that the Shach has an understanding that the first svara is a standalone svara?
Yes, so I don't remember what chapter it is in my Sefer. You can look at that over there. The chapter is called Canned Corn. I don't know what number it is, okay? But I'm talking about the two throats in the Shach. Okay, so now, the other kind of...
What about cow corn?
Now, the other kind of corn, the cow corn, is different. There's no way that that's nechacha. Okay, if you go to a farm, okay, the farmers plant the cow corn near the road, okay, because people who stop at the top of the road and try to steal their corn will lose all their teeth. Okay, you can't bite into the cow corn. It's for sure not nechacha. So that corn needs lots of cooking. So that cow corn brings up a different shaila. Okay, I'll just tell you the shaila. We're not going to talk about the answer. Talk about the shaila, and that is like this: the things that cow corn is used for in the United States are things that are not Ola Shulchan Aruch. Okay, corn chips and tortillas are not Ola Shulchan Aruch. But in other countries, those foods are Ola Shulchan Aruch. Tortillas in Mexico are Ola Shulchan Aruch. So there's a shaila about what do you do when you cook a food in one place that's going to be served in a different place. Meaning, if we make tortillas in Mexico and they're shipped to the United States, well, in the place where they were made, they were Ola Shulchan Aruch, and they're not Nechuchai. So they should be Bishri as well. But they're going to meet consumer in the United States, who for me it's not Ola Shulchan Aruch. Now, if we think about the Sfaras, why do we care if it's Ola Shulchan Aruch? We care about that because a food that's Ola Shulchan Aruch makes me feel closer to the person who gave it to me and could lead to chasinus. If it's not Ola Shulchan Aruch, I don't feel so nice, I don't feel so good about doing me this favor of giving me the food. Well, should that depend on the person who's making the food or the person who's receiving the food? The person who's receiving it doesn't feel any special connection to the guy who made it because he's like, big deal, he gave me tortillas, it didn't mean anything to me. But the guy who made it, when he made it, he was making this thing that should need Shulchan Aruch, which shouldn't need Bishri as well. Okay, it's a shiloh, which way to go on that? Yes, very good. Very good. It's chapter 11. I looked up before to see which chapter it was. It's Halacha Zayin. That Rash Marua is a riot to this day. Yes. So I'm not going to talk about it too complicated. But if you have to say, if you looked at chapter 11, that's where I talk about it. But it's totally on that Rash Marua. Correct. Okay. Our last topic is how to create Pasis Rol or Bishri Rol. And this is pretty similar. Okay. The Gemara says there are three ways to make. The Gemara talks about pas, we assume that the same thing is for Bishri also. The Gemara says there are three ways to make pas Yisrael. Okay. The first way is, if the Goy lights the fire and the Yid puts the food on. The second way is, the Yid lights the fire and the Goy puts the food on. Okay, those are simpler ways of making Bishri Yisrael. Okay. The first one is the simplest, the Yid put the food onto the fire, he cooked the food. The second one is the Yid made the fire and the Goy put it on, that's also Bishri Yisrael. And then the Gemara says a third case, if the guy made the fire and the guy put the food on, but the Yid stirred it or stoked the coals, that's also considered Bishri Yisrael. Okay, so there's three ways to make food Bishri Yisrael. So now, there are extensions from two of those ways. One is, the second thing was if the Yid makes the fire, it's Bishri Yisrael even though he didn't put the food on. So from an extension of that thing is that if a Yid makes the fire and the guy lights the fire from that fire, we'll call Eish Me'eish. The guy lights the fire from the Yid's fire and then cooks on the second fire, that's also considered to be Bishri Yisrael, because the Yid's fire is what made available the second fire that the guy could cook on. Okay? That's one extension. And the third case, which was where the guy made the fire and the guy put on the food, and the guy, but the Yid stoked the coals, so the Rambam understands that does not work because the Yid is part of the cooking. He has nothing to do with the cooking, but it's a hecker. And for Bishri Yisrael, all we need is a hecker to sort of separate us from Goyim to avoid chasnas. And therefore, if you have Hashlachas Kisein, that's also good. I mean, the Yid has to do something that has connection to the cooking process. Even though what he does, is not meaningful, doesn't make the food cook any better. But it's a hecker that in this cooking process, the Yid has to be involved. That's also considered to be make the food Bishri Yisrael also, or he's a Pas Yisrael, but for us, it makes it Bishri Yisrael also to Hashlachas Kisein. It's an extension of the third one. Okay, so we have these three ways the Gemara says, and two extensions of how to make the food Bishri Yisrael. Now, this ways of making Bishri Yisrael is most, comes up to which one to choose is in a restaurant. Okay, but one of the main reasons, not the only reason, but one of the main reasons to have a Mashiach Tamidi in a restaurant is in order to make Bishri Yisrael. That is to say, is if there's not a Yid all the time and the fires go out, then who's going to light the fire? Now, in the morning, I guess you could have a Yid come around and light all the fires, but what happens if the fire goes out? What happens if the fire, they need to turn the fire off and then they want to turn it back on? So having a Mashiach there means is that's going to make sure that the food is Bishri Yisrael, because the Yid's going to light the fires or put the food on, whatever he's going to do, he's going to do something to make the food Bishri Yisrael. Now, the Other thing is, in a restaurant type setting, is that people will use a pilot light, okay? And they use the pilot light as a form of HVH, okay? Now, a pilot light, in technical terms, the word pilot light means there's a small fire that you light the big fire from, okay? Now, so what we want is not specifically a pilot light, we want what's called a standing pilot, a pilot light that's on all the time. So in homes, that doesn't exist anymore. In homes, there are pilots, but they're not standing pilots. Meaning in homes, there may be a little flame that goes on from which you light the big flame, but the little flame itself doesn't stay on all the time. But in restaurants, it's more common that their kind of stoves will have a pilot on them. So what you'll do is, a yid could light that pilot, and then any cooking that gets done there is being done from the, it's an ish, from the ish, for the yid's ish. Okay? So the best way to do it is always to have a yid there. A yid there means is he can make sure the fires are lit or the food is put on, whichever method they choose, or he can light the fires and make a bishul salt. Other times, they'll rely on a pilot light. The Rama says, sounds like it's l'chadchila. There are those who think maybe it's not l'chadchila. But that brings into a, it actually brings the use of a pilot light without a mashgiach brings up a second question. Okay, and that is, there's a deal at the end of, I forgot if it's in Kufi Beis or Kufi Beis, that says that if we have a sasek or bishul akum, the food is mutter. It's mukach from the case of the Gemara that sasek means is you don't even know if the yid lit the fire. So there is reason to, there's room to argue and say that if the yid lit the fire in the morning or he lit on the pilot, we can assume that it stayed lit even if maybe it went out when he wasn't there. Okay, that's from the din side of it. Hashkacha wise, it's not a great way to give hashkacha. It's not great to give hashkacha and say, well, even if it maybe went out, it's a suffix, so suffix is mother. That's not a great way to give hashkacha. Okay, so most would not rely on that. Here in Chicago, we have the yidden light the fires, and we have the pilots lit by the yid also as a backup. And in case something goes wrong, the yid lights the pilots, and you know, every once in a while he'll relight the pilots, so that in case by mistake something happened that he didn't light the fire, then they'll be caught. It'll be a backup of the pilot, but they do the pilot, but that's not really what they're counting on. Okay, some places they can't manage to have a mashgiach to meet the all the time, so what they'll do is they'll have a pilot, and then they make some kind of a rule. Like for example, there are places that have a rule: no one's allowed to have matches in the kitchen. Or they take a big Shiva candle. You know, in a Shiva house, they have a 7-day candle. And every Sunday morning, a yid lights the candle. And they tell the guy, if the fire ever goes out, light it from the Shiva candle. So we'll give them at least a way to do it, you know, if they wanted to light it, you know. Okay, so such things like that. But again, we here, and many cities, I don't know what's are you, but, oops, those you guys, in many cities, will only let a restaurant that is cooking with a mashgiach tamidi. Now, even with a mashgiach tamidi, there's one thing that you may have heard of, I don't know if you did, it's called a convection oven. Okay, convection oven, do you guys still hear me? No?
We got cut off a little bit.
Okay, do you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, so, you guys picture froze, so I'm wondering if you're not hearing me.
I'm gonna hang up.
Do you hear me? Okay, I'll start again. Okay, let me start again. Okay, so a convection oven is, you've probably seen them, like even in the yeshiva kitchen or in a shul kitchen, for sure caterers use these. These are the ovens. It's an oven, but it opens up with the doors that both pull out, like you open them up sideways rather than pulling down like in a home kitchen. Okay, and those, what's special, why they call the convection oven is because, aside from a fire that's inside here to make the food hot, there's also a fan inside there. And the fan spreads the heat around to make the food, to help the food cook better. So which is good for cooking. You guys still there? Anybody there? guys hear me?
Yeah. We can hear you. I'm working on the video.
Okay, so I'll keep on talking then. So in the convection oven, the fan is good for helping it cook, but the fan has a problem. The problem is that when you open the door to the convection oven, the fan's going to blow the heat in the face of the guy who's standing there. Okay, so it's not very pleasant to open the door of a convection oven with the fan blowing in your face. So what they do is that when you open the door of the convection oven, the fan automatically goes off. Okay, it saves you from hot air blown in your face. But in many of them, not only does it turn off the fan, it turns off the fire also. Now, the problem is, if that happens, then in the morning, the heat turned on the fire, came along, and they put the food in, and then an hour later, they opened up the convection oven, and for 10 minutes, the oven was open. The oven could cool down. And if there's no fire on, then the oven's going to cool down, and when they close the doors again, then whoever closed the door, that's the one who's turning it back on. Right? So in a...
Well, it might cool down so completely that it's not hot at all, like the case by...
If it stays for long enough, that could happen. So the mashgiach needs to keep an eye that either doesn't stay open for very long, or if it stays open for a long time, then he just closes the door, or he opens and recloses it to make sure he's the one who turned it back on. Okay? But it does, you know, it's not automatic. If it stays open for 30 seconds, it's not going to cool down completely. It has to cool down considerably in order to not be considered that the continuation of the fire. Okay?
Wouldn't the master the fact that the yin turned the switch on? Meaning, even if the guy closes it, it's not going to help if the yin never turns on it on.
Right. So that we consider to not be a participation. The Hefter says that even a kisim has to be in the cooking process, just turning on the electricity in the building or turning on the knob that says tomorrow, you know, when the guy turns, closes the door to go on, that's not considered enough. He has to do something that gets a fire on or to get the fire on. Putting on the switch that theoretically will get the fire on is not good enough.
So a timer wouldn't work?
Correct. So, okay, one last thing, which is, in what I just described to you is in a restaurant or a caterer. Okay, in a factory, it's a little more complicated. Okay, in a factory, there's almost never a mashgiach tamidi. Okay, so how are you going to make the food get cooked? If it needs bishul yisrael, what are you going to do to make it bishul yisrael? Okay, so there are some fancy methods. There's something called a shein machine. It's a way to dial in and turn on an oven, or turn on a boiler, or turn on, you know, machinery on. We use that in some places. It's a whole fancy system. The mashgiach essentially is turning it on from his bedroom. But in many cases, the way they make bishul yisrael is through the boiler, which is to say that in the factory, they don't cook the food with a little fire under every pot. Okay, that's not efficient. What they do is they have one place where there's a boiler that's making steam. The steam spreads all around the factory, through pipes all around the factory, and when a pot needs to be used for cooking, they open up a valve and steam comes out to around that pot and heats up the food. So, in many factories, when the boiler stays on all the time, it never goes off. Or if it goes off, they just put it on to low, because it's so hard to start it back up again. So, what they'll do is, the yid will turn on the boiler, the yid will start up the fire in the boiler, and then, as long as he makes sure that that boiler doesn't go off, okay, he keeps track of it, different ways to keep track, but he watches that the boiler never goes off, everything made in that factory is assumed to be bishul yisrael. Now, it's just that's very common of how to make food bishul yisrael, but in a factory. But just to think about is, wait a second, did the yid turn on the boiler make the food bishul yisrael? Let's think for a second. Nobody cooks food in the boiler. They cook the food in the pot that's 100 feet away. So how does it help to turn on the boiler to make the food that's being cooked 100 feet away be considered cooked? Okay? There's two approaches to how to view that. Both of them think that it's okay. Okay? Now, you could disagree, but there are two approaches that think that it's okay. One is, this is like this. The heat that's cooking this food is the fire that's in the boiler. Okay? It's just efficient to, instead of having 10 fires in the factory, to have one and then spread it around through this thing called steam. But basically, it's one fire that's cooking everything in the factory, and they lit that fire. The fact that the heat from the fire spreads through the steam, that's just a simple way to do things. But really, it's this fire that's doing the cooking. That's one way of seeing it. Another way of looking at it is say, no, the fire is the fire, and the steam is a different thing. But the steam is at least HMH. Let's say the steam is as if it's on fire. Okay, but where did that steam get its fire, so to speak, from? From the fire that the yid lit. The yid lit the fire in the boiler, and now that fire continued on and went and lit another fire, which you're calling the steam. Okay, so HMH is also considered fishing salt. One or both of those reasons are pretty accepted, and that's a pretty common way to make food fishing salt in the factory. When there's not much gift there, they do like it. Okay, I'm finished what I had to say. I'm sure you guys have questions. So,
is this any different than the steam that you were mentioning before by the tuna?
Yes, I should have clarified that. Let's say you're cooking ketchup, okay? The steam is not hitting the ketchup. The steam is just hitting the pot, and the ketchup is cooking in the pot like regular. So it's really hard to, I can't say impossible, it's really hard to view that as being mu'ushan, being smoked. What do you mean smoked? It's not being smoked. It's in a pot cooking like in your house, just plain old cooking. It's not like when I took out the tuna is being, the steam is hitting the tuna. The tuna is sitting there, it's just like smoke might hit it. You see the steam is hitting it, so you could view that potentially and think it's being smoked. But the ketchup is not being smoked. There's no steam hitting the ketchup. The steam is hitting the pot. And then the pot is cooking like every other pot cooks.
If you have a notch of the steam as H from before, so then what's the difference? Meaning, it's heating up the pot, which is heating up the water, which is heating up the tomatoes, which is making the ketchup. But if we're not notch of it as H, then there's no H. It's like putting it out in the sun.
So if you want to say that the steaming, live steaming is considered like you're smoking because there's not a fire here, then maybe this should be considered there's no fire here also.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a fair question. There are those who feel like that. I think that most don't think, well, might say in the pot is cooking, it's cooking through heat. That's what's going on here. Okay, so it's a little different than when you shoot the live steam at the fish because it's sort of like a smoking. It's like an in-between. You can at least imagine it's like a smoking. When I'm just heating up the pot, then somehow the steam is a bit differently. Okay, I guess you could say the same.
If the tuna was sitting in the pot and the steam in the room was heating up the pot,
that would be not, then we would not be able to make up. But that's not what's going on. That's the second cooking of the tuna happens like that. But the first cooking of the tuna, that makes it edible, that first cooking, the steam is straight right hitting on the fish.
Well, according to the first Torah, if you cook water in a pot, and then a guy takes the pot and boils something in it without H, it's just the boiling pot of water that you just made. What would that be?
How could it be us? And if I heat up the water, how could that be worse than my making the fire?
He is now taking this thing called a fire, except that he's the one using it to do the special.
I made that. I mean, I heated up that pot of water. It's hard to see how that could be us. When I heated up the pot of water, now you're going to say, but he's taking your pot of water. Yeah, but that pot that he got is from me. I have to think about that, but it's hard to imagine how that could not be considered Bishri Yisrael. The food has been cooked in the pot that I heated up. So, everything like that, you know.
What happens if there's a fire that's based on electricity, and then the electricity goes out, the power outage for an hour?
Mm-hmm.
It cools, and then the electricity turns back on. Is that visual? Is that a problem?
That is a problem. Yes, it is. So, in it's not such a common event that the Bishul Yisrael is created through an electric heat. That should be a problem. But there are situations where it is. It's more of a pas issue. When you make bread to make pasisrael, they may have a yid may have an element that the yid likes that stays on all the time. Okay, we didn't talk about that, but the yid could make a heating element that would be electric. So I remember a company where we had that, where we had a watch on it. I don't remember what it was, but we had that was a control that if the electricity went out, we knew about that. I don't remember what the control was. But yeah, if the electricity would go out, then we would have an issue. That would be, now when it went back on, it wasn't turned on by the end.
But what about the fact that the guy's not mechanic to cook? He's only mechanic to turn on electricity.
He's at work, he's an electric worker.
So you're right. So if the only thing that happened was the guys in the electric company were fixing electricity, that would be great. But if they did the grasshoppers, they're not mechanic to cook, it would be mother. The problem is that that's not the only thing that happens. After those guys did their thing, they turn on the electricity in the building, somebody put the bread into the oven. Okay, so there's a guy who participated in the cooking with very much kavanah to cook. So you could say the first guy doesn't count. True, he doesn't count. But the second guy counts. The person who actually made the food, he cooked it. So the fire was magic, came from no place, but the cooking was done by a cook.
What about sous-vide cooking?
What about it? What's your question?
Can it cook in less than
yassa lettuce? The way it cooks is that, let's say, I don't remember the number, let's say chicken, in order to be cooked, has to be 165 degrees at its center. So this keeps the pot at 165 degrees the whole time, and over a very long amount of time, it eventually cooks the chicken. Instead of hitting it with 350 degrees heat, heats it with 165, protected and covered in water and bags and whatever, but it cooks it, but it's got to be at lettuce, but it's got to cook it to the internal temperature that it needs to get cooked.
Salmon cooks in a sous vide around 110 degrees.
110 degrees? Okay, so if that's possible, I believe you, if that's possible, then it doesn't need a shishol. It wasn't cooked. It's not considered cooked. That's not cooking, if it's not yet lettuce, but... So if that's true, that you can cook it at 110 degrees, it's like cold smoked salmon. If cooked without heat, that's not considered cooking. Correct.
Is that true by sushi-grade salmon as well?
So sushi-grade salmon is a very particular type of salmon. That's not your regular everyday salmon. You could argue that in sushi-grade salmon, it's nechachai. But the arguments against that are that there are... Most people in America, at least at this time, or at least that I know of, let me say, is won't eat sashimi. They won't eat plain sushi-grade salmon. If you put that onto a plate, they won't eat it. In other countries, they do, but here, most people won't. They will do is they'll make sushi out of it. They'll take some of that salmon, mix it with rice and vegetables and seaweed, and then they'll eat it. So in that case, Rybelski said, really, they're not showing that they consider the fish to be edible. They consider it to be edible enough to be like a spice in a food, to be part of a food, they would be willing to eat it. But most people at this point are not ready to eat it, literally, would to cut down with a fork and knife and just start biting into it. So if that would change, if people start being like in other countries that they eat it actually as is, then it would be, then at least the sushi grade would be considered nechachai. It wouldn't be for every salmon, for that salmon. But at this point, it's not true. At this point, most people won't eat it straight. So.
They're only eating it with the sugar.
They're only eating it with the sugar, as opposed to, and I said to you, by the sushi, no, because you're okay. So let me think about that. I have to think about that question.
Back to the sous vide. is the bag considered like the steam jacket, or is it considered cooked in water?
It's cooked in water. I'm not sure what you mean, but is it like a steam jacket? It's cooking in water. There's a pot of water. The food is protected by the bag, you know, from getting waterlogged, but it's cooking in water. So
why don't we say it's being cooked in heat, which is controlled by water?
You can whatever you want. So there's a fire in there, and the fire is cooking the food. There's water in between. There's lots of times there's water.
So if a yid heats up the water,
right?
And a yid puts the bag into the water.
That's fine. If the yid turns on the sous vide machine, that's fine. He made the fire. That's okay. But he doesn't have to do all the parts of it. He's got to put on the fire then. So that's true. If he puts on the fire, then they can put in the food. Well, the other way around. The guy can put on the fire, he can put in the food. That's fine. But when you say he doesn't need bishul yisrael, it means the yid has to do something. If the yid does nothing, then that's not bishul yisrael.
So, going back to the tuna case, if the tuna is sitting in a clean, or is for itself from the steam, that you're saying is considered H, but if then you take away that kli, which is just there for protection, is that's already, that's considered steaming, and we're going to make off.
Right, you're trying to say is that when the second cooking of the tuna, it's inside the can is just to protect it and to keep it from falling apart. As opposed to the first cooking, that's and the first cook is doing the same thing. They're both being cooked in steam. You could look at it like that. I don't see it that way.
Well, and therefore, I'm saying that a steam jacket, it's very hard to hear a cook if you have a steam jacket, a pot that has a steam jacket on it, because it's really being cooked in steam. It's just that you need some sort of cleats and macabre.
I don't hear that. I mean, when we cook soup in my house, the reason I put the soup in a pot is not... Is it because we're really cooking it in the fire, we just don't want the soup to be all over the floor, so we put it into a pot. I don't know, that's how you cook it. You cook it in a pot. That's how you cook things. You're saying, no, really, I'm cooking it in the fire, and the pot is just because I want to keep my floors clean. I don't see it like that yet. You got just a few more minutes, because I got to go for something at 4:30.
Do you have any thoughts on how come the say a couple
no, I didn't say that. Everything has to be looked at by itself. The fact that it's canned per se doesn't make it not halacha shulchan aruch. The fact that it came out of a can is not an automatic disqualification. But it depends on the food. Either it is or it's not halacha shulchan aruch. In my mind, canned corn, in my mind, is halacha shulchan aruch because they actually serve it halacha shulchan aruch. They do that. They take it out of the can and they serve it. But the fact that it's coming out of a can is not an automatic not halacha shulchan aruch. But sometimes it may happen to be. But it's not automatic.
So even though somebody will call up the White House and they say they don't use canned items, you're saying that my husband will do it.
Yeah, it depends on the situation. It depends on what I mean is that if they think that's not the quality they want to use, then they won't use it. Or if they will use it, but it's not the can per se that makes the difference. It's not the automatic criteria. If you're in a can, you're automatically disqualified. It depends. Either it is or it's not. It depends on the situation. But you have to bear in mind, just remember, the din is that if a guy cooks a kamecha ben drusoy, it's considered to be usher. Now, there's a question on that. How can it be usher? It's not olah shulchan aruch when it's kamecha ben drusoy. Of course not. Nobody eats shulchan aruch, they never serve food that's kamecha ben drusoy. So the answer to that question is that when you cook a food, and it's basically ready, and it needs a little help, and it's not exactly perfect, but it's basically ready to be eaten, that's good enough. The fact that it needs a little help to be Eilu Shulchan Aruch doesn't take away from it being Eina Eilu Shulchan Aruch. And the gather of how much is a little bit is, even if it's Kamaicha Ben Drusoy, and it still needs a nice amount to cook into it, that's considered a little bit. In a relative sense, that's considered a little bit. So the fact that my food comes out of a can and it's not exactly perfect, but it's relatively the way that you turn a Shulchan Aruch, that's considered Shulchan Aruch. The fact that it's missing a drop, it's not exactly perfect, there's not enough to say, no, it's not Eilu Shulchan Aruch because it's not exactly perfectly the way we do it, you know.
If you have an item that is distributed everywhere, but you judge Chicago is not Eilu Shulchan Aruch, but somewhere else it might be, you can't just give out shulchan because it's being distributed in multiple places, right?
100%. That's correct. Now, it is totally on the shaila that I said to you beforehand, which is, if the place of the cooking, it's not Eilu, but in the place where it will be eaten, it is Eilu, that's a separate question. But you're correct that when we make the judgment, we have to think about who's going to eat this food. We can't just look at narrowly by what people do in Chicago. No, if we have to care about where it's going to be eaten, then we have to care about that. We have to think about whoever could eat it. Yeah, that's correct. Okay, thank you, everybody.
Spencer, are you familiar with the tshuva I once saw a long time ago? I think it was written by
I'm familiar with that.
Huh?
I am familiar with that. I didn't talk about that. It was one of the things that I skipped.
Do you know where I can find that in Shulam?
Do I know where you could find it?
Yeah, it's not the Hebrew system. He wrote it up.
No, it's correct. It's I believe it was printed in the first volume of Masura magazine. Masura is an OU publication. I believe it's in the first volume of it. If not, it's one of the first volumes for sure. Which you could get. The OU will give it to you. You get it from the OU's website. You get it from...
You discussed the special questions, right? That's what it's... That's
correct. I didn't talk about that before. I skipped it. It was here in my notes, but I skipped it.
I saw it many years ago. I just don't remember where I saw it.
Okay. Say it again. I'm on my way. Great. Smooth with everybody here. Thank you.